The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Good day, everyone. We're going to go from the boardroom to the bedroom, but we're going to take a short stop through jobs and employment. I mean, this day and age, economically speaking, it's very, very difficult to get a job. So once you land that job, some people think, you know, their problems end at that point. But realistically, during your course and your job, you come across a lot of problems like discrimination, wage pay, which is a hot topic right now in the political arena, and just a various amount of different things that you didn't anticipate. So where do you go? Who do you turn to? Well, my guest today is incredible, Charles Joseph. He's the founding of Kirschenbaum Associates, and their firm, he and his firm, have accumulated over $100 million in settlement for their clients and customers. And it's so empowering to be able to know that you can reach out to somebody and that you really have somebody to help you, because a lot of people don't even understand the laws and the intricacies, what comes with them. So without any further ado, I'd love to introduce my guest, Charles Joseph. Hi, Mr. Joseph.
Hello, and thank you for the beautiful introduction.
Thank you. Well, let me ask you, how did you go about founding Joseph and Kirschenbaum?
I worked for one of the white shoe Wall Street type law firms, although it was in Midtown Manhattan, and I was there for 7 years and decided to go off on my own, and I didn't really have much of a plan at all. I didn't know what kind of law I was going to practice, and I called it Charles Joseph, Law Offices of Charles Joseph, and that's how I founded it. But in 2004, I hired a young man who was, before he went to law school and after he went to law school, before and during his law school, his name's Maimon Kirschenbaum, and after he was a paralegal, I hired him as an attorney. He himself had faced discrimination in the workplace because he, like me, is an Orthodox Hasidic Jew, and he had an untrimmed beard because he won't trim it; it's against his faith, and wore his yarmulke during the interviews. And despite having really good grades from really good school, didn't have a single offer. And working with me wasn't my hope for him. But luckily, he didn't get any other jobs. And he came to work for me. And together, and I think with in the area of getting paid correctly, getting your overtime and getting your tips, he's really been at the heart of the practice. So that's how the practice got founded. It's Joseph and Kirschenbaum. New York City.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, do you find now that there's more of an increase in discrimination?
I don't know if there's an increase. I haven't noticed an increase in discrimination since I started doing the plaintiff's side, in other words, the employee side of employment law, which includes discrimination. And that was in around 2001, because I founded the firm in 1997. And there's certainly been no abatement of discrimination. And I don't believe that there's been... I mean, I think that the 1964 Civil Rights Act that President Johnson got enacted and signed did a lot. But discrimination of all kinds, racism, sexism, Islamophobia in particular now, LGBT discrimination, these are rampant. And, you know, part-time I study history. Employment law has been good to me. And I study history part-time online at the University of Edinburgh, and I'm interested in Old English history, the early Middle Ages and the Middle Ages. And I was amazed to find that there were kind of the analog of anti-discrimination laws in place under the laws promulgated by King Alfred. In the 9th century, in the 800s. So I think this problem goes back to time immemorial. It's a product of human nature and a power imbalance, a power dynamic, and it hasn't stopped, and it'll never stop, and it'll never go out of fashion, unfortunately. But the laws that we have in place, the federal and the state laws, laws in Europe and in countries all over the world, can be very effective in remedying discrimination, if not preventing it.
Well, Charles, let me get this correct. You say that you actually represent the company that's being, you know...
No, we are a member of the National Employment Lawyers Association, which is a good place for people to go if they're looking for a lawyer. Members of the National Employment Lawyers Association have to certify that they, at least 51% of the employment work they do for plaintiffs. My firm does no work other than for employees. We will not work for an employer. It's a matter of principle in some ways. Not that there aren't innocent employers, but we want, you know, we have limited resources, and we want to devote that to our cause. And we also don't want to be taking positions in court that contradict each other.
Right.
You can as a lawyer, but we'd rather not.
Well, let me ask you this. How difficult, if you have a client that comes in, say, a typical sexual harassment with the female against the boss, how difficult, what do you have to do to be able to succeed and to prove it?
Well, the burden ultimately comes down to our clients, to the employee or the former employee. If we can state what's called on its face, meaning prima facie, one of the few Latin words that from law school I know what it means. If we can state a prima facie case, then I was treated, everybody else that worked there was a man, and I was treated differently. I was treated not as well as the men.
That's
a prima facie case. But then the employer has the opportunity to come back and say, no, we let you go because you weren't doing a good job.
Right, yeah.
Now, when they've stated a case with some evidence, it then becomes our duty to show that, no, that's an excuse. You made that up. It's a pretext. Mm-hmm. And or you made it up in order to cover yourself up. So how hard is it? It depends on the facts. And we don't need, and the Supreme Court's been really clear about this, we don't need overt evidence. We don't need a smoking gun or an email or a witness.
So
we can demonstrate
is,
our case through circumstantial evidence.
So this is mostly by preponderance of the evidence beyond, as opposed to like a criminal beyond reasonable doubt.
Right. It's 51%. It's, okay. If you can prove your case by 50.001%, then that's how the judge will instruct the jury. They say if it's more likely than not, like you said, a preponderance of the evidence, uh-huh. that what the plaintiff is saying is true, then you must find for the plaintiff.
Wow. And I'm sure that the components of the case, the monetary damages also go towards the emotional distress that...
Yeah, they do. So you can look at, you know, it's kind of how people you win a case. And most of the cases, most of the times the defendant doesn't want to go to trial. Or your client wants to take the money that's being offered, you know, during a mediation if it's substantial. But we relish going to trial. Some of these cases do. Most of them settle, but they settle out kind of a virtual projection of what a jury might do, and so a jury can give you damages for all the wages you've lost. Let's say a person was fired wrongfully. Wrongfully meaning because of a discriminatory reason, mm-hmm. then they can give you, the jury should give you all the money you've lost. Say you didn't find a job, or you found a job that didn't pay as well. Up until that point, and then project into the future if you still haven't found a job. And 5 years' pay wouldn't be unusual.
Oh.
But you see, that's based on what you were making. So if you weren't making that much, 5 years' pay might not be that much, and it's a taxable award, and you pay in our case a contingency fee. If you win, we take a piece of your winnings, and if you lose, we take nothing. But the other part of it, as you say, is emotional distress. So if a person is enduring has endured what they think is illegally motivated ill treatment at work, or they were terminated, it's very common to be very distressed. I remember once speaking to a mayor of a town, or a former mayor of a town in Texas, and he was at that point a sheriff.
Mr. Joseph, I hate to interrupt you, but it's one of those, we got to go to a break. So if you don't mind, let's pick it up on the other side of the break. So we'll be
pleasure.
Right back with Charles Joseph. Thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/VoiceAmerica or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to Facebook.com/VoiceAmerica or search for Voice America.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Everybody, we're back with Attorney Charles Joseph, the founding partner, Joseph and Kirschenbaum. And he's going to really tell you, put you where the knowledge where you need to go in case if it's sexual, racist, religious, whatever context, if you're not comfortable in your job. So we're going to come back right now with Charles. Hey, Charles. Great. We were talking about the component of emotional distress in a lawsuit and how important it is.
Oh, it's true, and it can sometimes be the largest, sometimes can be by far the largest part of an award, because kind of ironically, the way this works is you get, in terms of lost wages and future lost wages, so you call front and back wages, that's determined by how much you were making and how much you projected you would make if we may hire economic damages expert, kind of does an actuarial chart of how much money you would have been making in 5 years. So you're not making much money if you're working as a server in a restaurant, in a small restaurant, you know, not a high-end restaurant. You're not making a lot of money, and that won't be a big award. But job trouble, and especially harassment, illegal harassment, sexual, racial, religious, as we disability-based, LGTB, the emotional devastation can be frightening, all the way to people being hospitalized. The psychologists tell us that there are three events that are pretty much equal. It's odd because we don't like to think of it this way. One is, God forbid, the learning of the of a terminal illness. Another is losing a life's partner through divorce or otherwise. And the third is losing a job or trouble on the job. And I don't know why that is, because we'd like to think that the job is a lot less important than the first two. And actually, I know that it is much less important than the first two, but somehow, and maybe especially in our country with our, you know, quote-unquote rugged individualism, the we invest so much of our identity into our work, and it's such a devastating rejection, or so scary, because people have power over you. So I remember speaking to this former mayor and current sheriff of a town in Texas, a guy with a, you know, you could tell from his voice. I never met him. A 10-gallon hat and a really tough guy. And he also had a job, something to do with they were putting up new utility poles. And he was terminated from that. And he was crying on the phone. And, you know, and people, it's one of the difficulties of the paralegals that screen the calls have is that people are so devastated when they call. And sometimes we can help them, and sometimes we can't. Sometimes we just need somebody to listen to them for a bit. So we try to do that. But, you know, sometimes people are fired for a wrongful reason that's not illegal. And in the United States, unlike a lot of countries in Europe, there's nothing you can do about that. They can fire you for being late if you weren't late, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Can you expound a little bit more? So you said they...
Emotional distress damages?
No, about that the law that they could fire you for something that's not on the, you know, on the books.
So in a lot of countries in Europe, you can't be fired other than for cause. So they have to have a good reason to fire you. In the United States, in every state, because each state has its own law in addition to the federal law, and they don't preempt, they don't interfere with each other. We have employment at will, which means that a person can be fired for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all. It's as if we're being rehired every day. So they could just one day decide not to rehire you. And the same, they could say, okay, instead of $30 an hour, you're going to get $15 an hour from now on. Well, that's the way it is. You were just rehired. And now, you know, it's harsh. But it's possible that there's a higher unemployment rate in some European countries because there's a permanent class of people that have had a criminal record or have had job trouble in the past. You like the person, you want to give them a chance, you think they'll do well, but you know you can't fire them because they can only be fired for cause. So in the United States, people might get more of a chance to get the job for the very reason that they're more vulnerable on the job.
Well, Charles, let me ask you this. Is there any, suppose somebody goes and applies for a job and they are not hired and they have a feeling that it's because of they being discriminated. Do you ever get cases like that?
Well, we get inquiries like that all the time. In a few instances, we take cases like that. Those are really hard to prove.
Yeah.
It's called failure to hire. And you pretty much have to prove that they would have been hired otherwise. So it can't be a feeling. And most jobs have a lot of applicants. Now, there are special circumstances. One is where there is, as we discussed before, you don't need overt evidence, but sometimes you have it. So I had a case where my client had received an email in error because somebody had hit reply all, and it said, this is the black lady. So they paid. They paid. Then I had another case where the same thing happened. The reply all, and it said, I don't think she's white. That was in Texas, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
They paid, too. Unfortunately, there's not usually overt evidence in a failure to hire case, so it's difficult to prove. Sometimes somebody's gone quite a way through the process, and everything is, a go, and, you know, they've quit their previous job, and all of a sudden they meet the head of the department, and, you're a black person. You turn up, and the head of the department's face turns red, and he mumbles something, and sometimes you can prove that case, because you were going to be hired. But there are tough cases.
What about cases with nepotism?
No, well, nepotism is legal.
Is it?
In the United States, surely, there's a... it's illegal in the contents of, like, a publicly traded company or a company that's owned by shareholders who are not present, because then somebody would be violating their duty to the corporation or the company by hiring, let's say, a less qualified nephew. But... in terms of other employees, so then shareholders would have an action if it was a serious hire or a negligent hire. But in terms of another employee who didn't get hired for the job because the nephew or the relative got hired, or the paramour, there's nothing you could do.
Wow. I had no clue because you always hear that. I mean, that just seems so... not fair. I mean, that.
Well, it isn't. But they say, I don't know who it was, one of our great Supreme Court justices, either Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes or Justice Cardozo, said, the law does not provide a remedy for every wrong. And, you know, in Europe, maybe there's a law against nepotism. I don't know.
Now, what is your view? We have like 3 minutes before break, but if you can give me your idea on affirmative action, like how do you, in your lens, legal lens, view that?
Well, I guess I have my views on that are mostly personal because it doesn't come up much in my practice. I think it's been a tremendous success. I think it's helped, you know, and we broke, when I say we, I mean because I'm white, and even though I'm Jewish, my ancestors came here long after the Civil War, but we as a country broke up the families of African Americans, and we deprived them in many ways of a good education. They didn't get good schools, and we owe them. And this is a small way to help lift people up into, you know, into a place where they should be on the merits. So I'm all in favor of it, and I hope the Supreme Court continues to uphold it.
So, with that in mind, there's no way somebody could bring a suit against, I guess, the federal government, would you say? I mean, this.
Actually, I mean, I was thinking as you're asking the question about the federal government, there's class action lawsuits that are more relevant to this, but that's probably not enough time to discuss before your break.
Okay. I don't know how much. We have like 2 minutes, so, but.
So I could say that we could do, it's called impact litigation.
Okay.
And a friend of mine. In other words, if you can show a disparate impact, if you can show that less women are being hired by this company than they get in terms of qualified applications, or less black people, or less Muslims, then you may be able, even without any smoking gun, to prove a case on the basis of disparate impact. Whatever policy they're adopting is resulting in them not hiring as many people in protected classes as they should. But I don't know of any direct right to sue under the affirmative action statutes.
Wow, that's interesting to know. Well, we're getting ready to go to break right now with Charles Joseph, founding partner, Joseph and Kirschenbaum. And, I'd love to go into some of your accolades for the human rights and your pro bono work. That's just going to be like, people don't really know exactly what pro bono is, but we'll be right back after the break with Charles Joseph. Thank you.
Thanks.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
How do you define work? Is it that mundane Monday through Friday place that seems to be sucking a third of your life out of you? Or have you made it a place of personal fulfillment, achievement, and purpose? If you are looking to make your work life the latter, tune in to Working on Purpose with Elise Cortez. There are all kinds of inspiring work-life stories told by people who have made work something to look forward to every day. Working on Purpose can be heard every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Empowerment.
Tune in to Lou Augusta's A Rumor of Empathy. Our show is committed to providing a generous listening, empathy, through conversations with our guests and you. Every issue deserves to be heard and thought out empathically. When it is properly sorted out, it becomes a solution rather than a problem. In Lou's program, his goal is to help you through conversations, which in turn can help your relationships and other aspects of your life. A Rumor of Empathy can be heard live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Empowerment.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be bringing back Charles Joseph, who is the founding partner of Joseph and Kirschenbaum. And people always like think that they have a tag and tend to have negative views of attorneys, but they really are good people and they do a lot of pro bono. That means, you know, without pay. And Mr. Joseph has some interesting stories because he was honored by the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights for his pro bono work. But listen, for obtaining political asylum for China's leading literary dissident, also refugees from Pakistan, Sudan, and the Ukraine, as well as getting the wife and children of a Haitian ruler organizer out of hiding, believe it or not, in Haiti, and legally into the U.S. So, Charles, please tell us about your experience.
Well, that last one was a nail biter. I mean, to the extreme. I don't remember the names of the political players in Haiti. I think Aristide came in to replace these bad guys, but some of the older audience members will remember the horrible things happening in Haiti. I don't even want to talk about the atrocities that were being committed. And my client had been a farmer, a very small scale farmer, and he was the for the kind of new good government that was deposed by these Tonton Lacoute or these terrible people. He had been in the good government. He had been the head of his district to represent it to the government, the head of his farming district. So the local farmers, he was a young man, he had seven kids, but the local farmers had elected him to that position. When the Tonton Lacoute came in, they were looking for him. He worked with them for a while, but then one day he's walking back from City Hall to his home in the forest area, and friends came and warned him they're coming to get you, and they spirited him away into the forest immediately, where they put him in a hut for 3 days. Somehow, they managed to get him to a boat, and he floated to Miami, and he was he didn't have status, but he had a temporary status, and I met him. The problem was that they're now looking for his family to kill them because he escaped, his wife and seven little children. And in order to get them status here, I had to get him status. And so the CIA is somebody you stay away from, but there's people at the embassy that will help you. The U.S. embassy. The CIA are bad guys. And there was just an amazing amount of things that had to be done, and in secret we had to get them to a doctor so they could get their medical authorizations. And then the news came that there was an air embargo, and the United States stopped flying to and from Haiti.
Oh, no.
And Air France continued to for, like, another week. And I had, at that point I was working at that large firm, before I started my own practice, and we represented American Airlines in a lot of their, maybe most of their corporate transactions, and I spoke to some of the partners, and they spoke to the people at American Airlines who used their connection with Air France. They bumped seven people off the flight.
Oh, my gosh.
At the last flight out. Actually, they bumped one, two, three, four, five, six people that would not have a problem going back and forth, people who were not in any kind of political trouble.
Uh-huh.
They just bounced them. And but the mother, my client's wife, or I guess she was my client too at that point, of course would not board the plane until there were eight tickets, because she needed every one of her kids, and we didn't have the eighth ticket. And at the last minute, maybe 20 minutes before the flight, Air France succeeded in bouncing somebody else off. We got them all to the United States. And they're a happy family. It's been a long time now. A happy American family living in Long Island.
Wow. What so a coup.
I think that's my signature achievement as a lawyer. I'm very, very proud of
and
that.
You did, and you did all this, I mean, this massive amount of...
Well, the Lawyers Committee for the Human Rights, you know, was supervised me, but I was kind of like off on my own because I was moving very fast. But I needed money, too. For flights, and I went to the head of the firm's pro bono committee, and at Debevoise, and he told me that the firm can't fund expenses. We can just do legal work. He said, however, and he took his checkbook out of his suit. He wrote me a personal check for a large amount of money. That's how we got money to fund whatever expenses we needed. So,
wow, I mean, that's impressive. An incredible story.
John Kiernan, his name is John Kiernan, I'm remembering now. He's a partner at Debevoise, he's the head of the pro bono committee at that time, John Kiernan.
Did you ever follow up? I mean, do you know?
No, we had a party with balloons and cake for the kids when they came. I have pictures of it, and they were all very shy. And I think I followed up once after that, and I've long lost contact with them. It'd be fun to find out how they're doing.
Oh, that's a great, great story. Well, going back to with pay, the discrimination with pay. You know, you hear constantly. Hillary Clinton saying that, you know, women are not getting the same share, but yet at the same time, she underpays her women staffers. What do you think? I mean, should there be really a glass ceiling?
I think it's an atrocity, and I don't want to use that word lightly, because there are, you know, real atrocities going on in the world, but I think it's something that I hope that it's something that 50 years from now, we look back and we say, when we look back at that in the same way as we look back at blacks in the South drinking from separate drinking fountains and sitting in the back of the bus. I think it's disgusting. And it exists. And it's as rampant as it ever was. It's the othering, you know. And so if, you know, the people are comfortable with each other, they tend to exclude people who are different in some way.
Well, Charles, what is your feelings or your legal opinion about the federal government dictating whether, you know, the minimum wage or people, you know?
Well, I'm biased. Our law firm, we do all kinds of employment law, but our main work has to do with collecting unpaid overtime, often through class actions, often on individual cases. Especially for restaurant workers, but really for anyone that didn't get time and a half over 40 hours. Because everyone deserves time and a half over 40 hours, unless you don't. And most people do. And most people don't think they do, because if they're salaried, but it's not true. It doesn't matter if you're salaried. It only matters what your job function is. And you got to be subject to one of the exemptions, one of the exceptions. And the default rule is you get time and a half overtime. And so, and it's hard often to fit into one of the, depends how senior you are. The less senior you are, the less independent judgment you're exercising, the less you're kind of formulating policy, the lower you are on, you know, the proverbial, from the executive suite down to the field workers, the lower you are in that chain of hierarchy, the more likely it is that you're entitled to overtime. So So people should assume that they're entitled to a time and a half overtime after 40, even if they're salaried. So I'm biased because that's the bread and butter, is those kind of claims. But 100%, I think the federal government should be involved. Mary Part of Seattle and other places that are passing the $15 an hour minimum wage. And I think that, I know so many clients who make $7 and $8 an hour. And they work two jobs, and they can't make ends meet. And this is a wealthy country, and we can afford for people that are, certainly for people that are willing to work, that they should be able to at least make ends meet. And that's the reason Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Al Smith, at that time the governor of New York in 1938, put the minimum wage and the overtime rules into effect for two reasons. The fair day's pay for a fair day's work, and instead of it was with bakers and other, they'd hire a baker and make him work 80 hours a week and pay him, you know, whatever per hour. So what Al Smith and FDR thought was, well, if they want to do that, fine. They can pay them time and a half for over 40 hours a week, or in California, over 8 hours a day. But if they don't want to do that, let them hire a second shift. There'll be more jobs.
I think
especially now that machines are replacing jobs, and that's going to speed up a lot, I believe, in the next, you know, coming time, more than we might anticipate, that it's absolutely necessary to have more jobs. So the laws requiring a payment of time and a half for overtime have that effect. The penalties are huge because under federal law you're entitled to twice what they should have paid you. So if they were paying you $20 an hour and you were working overtime, they're still paying you $20 an hour, they should have paid you $30. Then for those unpaid, let's say they paid you nothing for after 8 hours a day, but say you're on salary. But it comes out to you were making $20 an hour on salary if it divided up. So then you should have been making $30. Well, you're supposed to get $60, then you get $60 if they didn't. If you sue them, you get $60 plus interest because there's a 100% penalty. And now New York State, which had a 25% penalty, has a 100% penalty. So the 100% penalty, it's actually called liquidated damages in federal, 100% penalty in New York, they're simultaneously recoverable. So you can get 300%. And that's a good way to keep employers on their toes in terms of keeping these laws, which most of them don't, which are told by the Department of Labor. Most of them don't.
Real quick, we got 1 minute before break, but I'm wondering, when you do a settlement, do they take in consideration cost of living? Because what you make today, 10 years from now, of course, it's not going to be, you know,
we'll make quick back-of-the-envelope calculations about the present value of the money. How much is that money? How much is if you would have been hired there and you would have been making $60,000 a year for 5 years and you're getting five-year awards, $300,000, well, how much is that $300,000 paid out over 5 years worth now? And to do that, you have to pick a discount rate, which has to do with inflation. So, yeah, that does get taken into consideration.
Okay.
It's not the major factor.
Okay, well, we go on a break right now with Charles Joseph, and, I mean, amazingly, he and his firm have accrued over $100 million worth in settlements for, you know, the rights for workers. So we'll be right back. Thanks.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The pressures of work, home, and personal life exerts its toll on us on a daily basis. Yet, it feels risky to let others see what lies beneath the facade, let alone talk about it. What would be possible if we could connect with each other at a deeper level in the place where our shared humanity lies? Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to discover how to do this in your own life. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Did you know there are close to 50 loss events that can produce the wide range of emotions we call grief? Grief is a normal and natural response to loss. We all experience loss in life. Often, when we do, people tell us we have to let it go and move on. But how do you do this, especially when you don't know where to start? Listen to 50 Shades of Grief with host Melody Dawn, live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Together, we can get through grief.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Charles Joseph, the founding partner of Joseph and Kirschenbaum. And, well, we're actually going to go, let's say, from the boardroom to the bedroom and discuss erotic capital in the workplace. So, with that, I'll reintroduce Charles Joseph. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. What is erotic? I was told by your assistant that we were going
to
discuss erotic capital.
Since you know you're doing your master's on top of everything else that you've done and accomplished on a little bit of what the anthropologists say. They said studying a wide range of honors and gatherers, they have amply documented that a man's hunting skills are directly related to his success with women. And that came from Lennon Schlein, author of Sex, Time, and Power. Excuse me, just losing my voice a little bit. So, with that, when you put women in the workplace with men, and the ones that are able to capitalize on their good looks is, according to Dr. Catherine Hakeem of the London School of Economics, she actually expounded the theory in 2010 that erotic capital has become the basis of social interaction. And basically, she's calling it using your personal magnetism.
That's a much more polite way to say it.
Yeah, that sure is. But saying that other studies have proved that beauty, intelligence, personality, and one's competence all determines one level of income. And that was by T.A. Judge in a 2009 edition of the Journal of Applied Psychology. So what I'm gathering is that it's an asset, and if you haven't used it, but that brings up a lot of really legal issues, and I was wondering what was your viewpoint on it, you know, personally and legally.
Yes, I guess I'll start with personal because it's easier for me. I've long been of the belief that being intelligent, for instance, is a genetic attribute. It happens to be a positive, mostly. And we see the taller people make more money. The taller people are more likely to be elected to political office.
Absolutely.
Men and women. And intelligence is another. I'm a religious person, but not everybody in your audience is, but however you want to interpret that. But it's also a God-given talent. It's not something you earn, intelligence. Yet we don't hesitate to apply our intelligence in the workplace or in college preparing for the workplace. So I think that it's absolutely true that people are a package, and personal magnetism, or if you want to call that erotic capital, is part of a person. What I don't really understand is, like, in terms of using it. I mean, if you if a person is a package and whatever is attractive and they get a raise and they get a promotion, that's great. But I don't know if this anthropologist advocated, or if anyone's advocating, a particular way of using it. Surely, you know, leading somebody on in the workplace, I think would be, in my view, is just immoral, as it would be in personal life. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
In terms of legally, you could get yourself in some pretty sticky situations. If somebody were to, I mean, for instance, I really don't know what they're suggesting, but if somebody were to become involved with a more senior person, if for the purpose of getting ahead, then obviously they're leading themselves into a kind of trap that they're not going to be able to get out of. And so I think that's a poor idea and unprofessional if somebody was thinking like that. But there's no question in my mind that what the scholar found is correct. I read similar studies, and good-looking people make more money as a trend, and people that come from privilege and were able to attend better schools make more money as a trend, and in our society where we don't believe that everybody has to be brought to, everybody should have an equal opportunity, but not necessarily equal results, I don't really see a problem with that, and I don't see even more any possible solution. There was, I think it was Kurt Vonnegut or another author, years ago, he had an equal society story, and the newscaster had to wear a red clown's nose on his nose, and they hired somebody with a speech impediment to be the newscaster. So, we want our pilots to have, steady nerves and fast reflexes, and we want our brain surgeons to have calm hands. We may want our salespeople to be attractive. There's no law against it. You can hire on the basis of attractiveness. You can fire on the basis of somebody not being attractive. But what you can't do is do it on the basis of gender.
Oh, okay.
So you could say, if you say, I'm looking for a good-looking man for this position, well, that's illegal. If you say, I'm looking for a good-looking, attractive person for this position, that's legal.
And I think it could also... it could be a gift or it could be a curse. I mean, there's a flip side.
I absolutely agree. I think it's probably what you're about to say, that, and because I actually was reading a study about this the other day, I don't know, Udemy, do you know that? And there's Vanessa, somebody, she does body language. Edwards, I think. And I mean, she said something I found pretty offensive. She said that women make poorer salespeople because when they're talking, attractive women, very attractive women, mm-hmm. too, because the men can't think when they're talking to them. Now, I don't know if why that makes you a poor salesperson.
I don't know. It seems like you could distract and be able to get your point across.
I don't know how that actually works out, but it's just definitely something that shouldn't guide our decisions. The world's unfair. The workplace is a reflection of the world. And I think we spoke in the break that the law doesn't provide a remedy for every wrong.
Well, we're getting ready we're getting ready to go to close, and I want you to be able to tell everybody, my audience, how they can get in touch with you and what's on your horizon.
Okay.
The floor is all yours.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're telling me not to sit. Okay, yeah. I'm Charles Joseph, and you can call me at our 800 number, which is 866-348-7394. I'm at extension 112. If you want to be sure to talk to me directly, it's probably best to call me in my cell because I'm often not in the office. Okay. My cell is actually out of commission for the evening, but we'll be back on tomorrow. And that's 917-328-8209.
And real quick, what is the website?
The website is jk-llp.com. It's Joseph Kirschenbaum, Limited Liability Partnership.com.
Well, thank you, Charles. It was such a pleasure, and I'm sure my audience was able to gather a lot of important and empower them to know that there is hope and help out there. So, once again, thank you. Thank you so much. That's Charles Joseph. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.